Session number 24623,
Rule 2. They used to test you out, you see. They'd, we'd have a boxing match up in the gymnasium, and they used to select opponents. And we were always a welterweight at about 10 and a half, 10 and three quarters. I'd like meet a bloke 6 foot, a light heavyweight or something like that. They used to do this to test you out, you see. So we used to get hammered a bit now and again. But it was all a part of the system, you see. It was. You get used to it.
You're saying that there were bullies, and did you get bullied at all?
No, no, because as I said, my boxing skills stood me in good stead there, because they knew how I could react. And how we used to react, if someone tried to bully you, an NCO, you politely, and I emphasise the word politely, to meet him in the gym. Then and that was legal. If he volunteered to go in the gym with you, then you could give him a good hammering and get away with it, you see. So they had to be wary as well. If you offered him out in the gym and he thought he was going to get a beating, he toned himself down a bit, didn't he? There's all sorts of tricks taking place. I was there. Yeah, but my brother, he was a good boxer.
What were the other recruits like, the men you joined with? Where were they from? What sort of background?
Oh, you find some wonderful friendships. Wonderful friendships, you do. Yeah, like in all walks of life, you pair up with an individual, or two or three individuals, you know. You find your own niche of friends and people you can rely on. But otherwise, it was very friendly. The squadrons, we were split up in squadrons. I was in C squadron, and the squadrons stuck together.
Yeah.
And there was strict, a lot of competition between squadrons in boxing. And because we had one very good thing there, on guard duty. They used to, if they wanted, what was it, we had 4 men on guard, but they always put 5 men on parade, inspection, first. And the other system, they called it the stick. And if you could, in the inspection, the officer, guard officer, when he inspects you, he'd pick the cleanest, neatest man out, and you step backwards, you were relieved of guard duty, but you was the commanding, the colonel's runner the next day. So you got out of guard duty. But there was a system where if you could get 3 sticks, you could get a walking out dress uniform, which is blue with, you know, with all the
clogging.
Yeah. And so I went in that for that in a big way. Actually, somewhere I'd got a photograph on it. But I came home with paid my own passage home in 1936, and I came home, and I've come home in my uniform, my walking out uniform.
What did the Colonel Stick Orderly have to do then?
All you had to do was to stand by for running out messages, taking bits of paper, which was quite a decent job, you know. Yeah, but the competition was, oof, you wouldn't believe it. I even went to the extreme, because in the army boots they had these studs. I even had a set of studs, chrome plated, and I had a pair of boots which I could keep, and when I went on guard duty I'd press these studs in. Of course they always inspected you. Beautiful chrome plated studs, you know. Looks as though they'd been burnished, and all little things like that. I even burnished me shirt buttons, because they're metal shirt buttons. They're what is known as a burnisher, and the button stick, which I've still got outside there, take them all up, polishing basket.
How often would you be on guard then? How often would you be called up? for possible
well, if you wanted to go all out for the stick, which I did, I wanted to get the suit. Because I was intending to try to save enough money to come home on a month's leave from Egypt. Because you had no leave from Egypt, you see. And so I was volunteering to do other blokes' guard duties. Just to get that 3 sticks. Which I did, I managed it too. But the competition was oof.
Did this start when you were doing your basic training?
No.
You were doing guards then?
No, it came later when you was fully trained.
Do you remember the men who joined with you in that recruit squad? How many of you were there on your batch when you turned up?
Well, on the intake.
Yes, on the intake.
I should say between 20 and 30. Yeah.
What sort of men were they? Where were they from? And what
they were from all over the country. There was two from Grantham, which I'm still in touch with one of them. Oh. And they came from all over all parts of the country. There was Irish and from Lincolnshire and Rutland, all, you know. But we were all King's Royal Irish Hussars. That's all that mattered. We were a fighting force and where they came, who they were, and but you got to know most of them, because they had them in squadrons. There was A, B, and C squadrons. And so there was always competition between the 3 squadrons. Even if it went on guard duty, it was to do the best on manoeuvres or best on the square. And because we used to do an awful, with the horses, we did an awful lot of work parading for King Farouk.
Oh, yes.
In Cairo. The old man, King Farouk. We used to have to go and give exhibition riding down at the Gezira Sporting Club and Casanil Barracks. And
how did you actually get to Egypt?
Hmm?
How did you get to Egypt?
Oh, we went by... We went by the First World War boats. The Nevassa and the Nevada. SS Nevassa and SS Nevada.
Which one were you on?
And the Nevada.
What was that like?
You cattle truck. There was no accommodation, it was hammocks. And down below, on the what they call the mess day, they had these tables, long tables coming out, seating somewhere about 10, 15 men. And in the morning, when breakfast time, well, let's go to bed at night. The tables was hooked up into the ceiling, and then you swung your hammocks up, and you'd get 20, 30 or more men in the mess deck sleeping in hammocks. When you got up in the morning, you took your hammock down, and they unhooked the tables and brought them down, and then you'd have your breakfast on them. And you can imagine the smell. It took place in them places. Terrible it was. Fortunately, it only took about, 3 weeks, I think it took us to get there to Egypt. Because that time we went through the Straits of Gibraltar and into the Mediterranean and up to Port Said.
But were there any stops on the way?
No. We went on straight out there.
Was it a smooth voyage?
Not bad. Not bad at all. Of course, it didn't suit me because I can be seasick by looking at the sea. Wow. So I've always suffered with seasickness. But no, the trip wasn't bad.
What did you do during the daytime when you were on the
gymnastics, yeah. Drill, training of all the same sort of training you'd be doing if you was on the land.
Were the horses on the same?
No, the horses, they'd gone prior to those. Mm. And they were there when we got there, in Abbasir. It was a big military base, Abbasir. Mm. and Cairo.
You landed at Port Said.
Yes.
What were your first impressions of Egypt when you arrived?
Not much. put your phone thing off and I'll tell you what they used to say. Well, we found it.
So you got to Port Said and you didn't think much of Egypt on first sight.
Well, you couldn't form an opinion, really.
No.
It was just sand and Egyptians begging and trying to sell you a load of rubbish and all that. But they trained us, loaded us in trains at Port Said,
yeah,
and took us up to Bab el Anouk, to Cairo,
yeah,
where we left the trains there and then marched from there, from Bab el Anouk to Abbasia.
What was at Abbasia?
It was a military garrison for all regiments of all descriptions. A big military establishment there was. And also there was the horses was there, and we immediately fell into the normal routine of feeding and watering and our horses until we got established. Of course, we had different uniform. We had drill uniform,
yes,
which I've got a photograph of me in there, and then we used to do manoeuvres out on the what we call the Bonduk, the desert.
What sort of manoeuvres were you doing?
Well, into squadron. Squadrons used to go out and then out on the desert, and then we used to have to fight them. So B squadron fighting C squadron and manoeuvres are becoming professional desert fighters on horseback. You see, I mean,
were you practicing for what sort of role? Were you practicing for battle? Were you practicing for screening and scouting, or
everything? Everything rolled in. We used to do night duties, out a day and night. We used to do a week out, because we had to take all the food with us and the horses' food with us and water carriers and for the horses. And you slept at night. What you did, you staked your horses, knocked the poles in the ground and put a rope off, and then you took the saddles off and left the bridles on, and you hooked the bridles straps through this rope, and you used the saddle as a pillar, and you had one blanket which was cowboy fashion, and you laid aside of your horse, because they used to wake you up on the alarm in the middle of the night, so you had to immediately put your saddle back on again and away. Bit rough going. Hello?
When you were training for fighting squadron against squadron, were you relying on your rifles, or were you relying more on the sword and the lance? What was the...
Well, I should say the rifle, for long distance.
Yes.
You see, but if you ran out of ammunition, I mean, you couldn't...
Sergeant Newman, Reel 2. You were saying that you couldn't carry very much ammunition.
No, part of our equipment was a bandolier with pouches.
Yes.
And each pouch held 10 rounds, a clip of five, two clips of five. So you could reckon that we had approximately 50 rounds. But we never had any backup. So when it came to the final thrust, because your horses, you were dismounted, naturally you were dismounted, using the rifle. And they had what is known as a horseholder. One man out of each troop had to take cover in a depression or somewhere, and he was responsible for keeping the horses out of sight. You had to rely on your rifle. But if you was getting hard-pressed, and you had to retreat, you know, immediately you had to revert back to your horse and scatter. We never did any actual fighting, really. But it all had to be practiced. We had to become very proficient at it.
What about living in the desert? Did you find that you were able to get comfortable living in the desert, or was it always uncomfortable?
Uncomfortable. Yeah. You could never get comfortable in the desert, not even during the war, when I was on the desert during the war. You can't get comfortable. The only place you can get is if you can sleep. If you've got a lorry, you'll sleep in the back of a lorry. Otherwise, you have to dig a hole in the ground and lay it as long as you're below ground, because you can take it from me. You get 130 degrees in the desert in daytime, and you get it freezing at night. You do. So if you want to get any sleep at all, you've got to be below ground level. And then, of course, you've got the scorpions, the snakes, and what do they call them? Kangaroo rats. Because they love to bed down with you. They're all them sort of things, too.
did you have to take any special care with the horses?
Special care of the horses? Oh, yes. Every care.
What sort of things did you have to do in Egypt that you wouldn't have had to
do? Well, you had to make sure your horse was comfortable, well-fed, watered, Zeus cleaned, and everything attached to horse. You had to. The horse came first. Like my sergeant major said to me one day, he said, "Take care of that horse," he said, "because that costs us a lot of money." He said, "We can get 50 of you in the army at the price of one horse."
What horse did you have in Egypt? You didn't have Black Tarquin, did you?
That what?
You didn't have Black Tarquin in Egypt.
Oh, yes.
Oh, did you?
Oh, well, the horses preceded us out of there.
So you had the same horse again?
Oh, I had the same horse.
But
we got used to one another in the finish.
Oh, you did?
Well, not quite, but nearly.
Nearly.
Mm. He tipped me off in a very embarrassing position. It was the young King Farouk.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he was celebrating, his birthday or something. And we gave a march by, or a gallop by, down on the Gezira Sporting Club. And he did manage to tip me off that day. That's when you're at a gallop, you see, the horses are squeezing in. And he decided he wasn't going to have that, so he got rid of me. Yeah. Very embarrassing, that one. I got headlines in the Egyptian Mail the next day.
Oh, you didn't. What did
it say? Who dismounted without an order? Yeah. They didn't mention no name for it. Yeah. It was great fun, though. Yeah.
What were the barracks at Abbasia like? Were they good barracks?
Lousy. And I mean lousy. Bed bugs. Oh. And you can't get rid of them. They even took extreme measures. Every Wednesday morning, because these old beds just take to pieces. The legs come off and everything. And every Wednesday morning was debugging morning. They used to use paraffin, and you took the bed to pieces and you painted paraffin on these bugs, because they was in every joint in the bed. But they were back again the next day, so it didn't make any difference. But we didn't have lice. I counted them at a later date in the prison camp. But bed bugs, yeah. Well, the next extreme measure they took, they moved us out into bell tents, onto the desert, and they sealed all the windows up, took the floorboards up, sealed all the doors up, and pumped some sort of gas in. I think it was a week before we got back in the barracks. And it hadn't touched the bug, but they were very hungry. They ate us alive when we went back in again, so we never did get rid of the bed bugs. They were transparent, you could see through them.
Yeah.
They're flat, and you could see through them. Next morning when you got up, they were bloated in blood. So we never did get rid of the bed bugs.
But were there any other pests or hazards that you had to face?
Well, we had all sorts of things in the barrack blocks. We had lizards. Yeah. We had scorpions. Locust things, stick flies or whatever they're called, and long thick things. We never had any snakes in the barrack block. That's all we did. Not in the barrack block, but in the mess room. We had a very poisonous snake that cleared the mess room in about 5 minutes one day. Yeah. But you get used to these things, you see.
I was going to ask if you found the, you mentioned the extreme climate, you know, very hot in the day, very cold in the evening. Was there anything you could do to mitigate the effects?
No, not really. I mean, British soldiers are trained to soldier anywhere. They're still out today. They can fight anywhere in the world, whether it's in the Antarctic or the on the desert, extreme heats, or wherever you like. I mean, we can do it. We can. Well, we could do it. Yeah.
Had you had to have a lot of inoculations before you got out?
God, don't mention them. They were sticking a needle in you and practically every day for one thing or another. But you want to remember this. They weren't individual needles. They had the same old needle for years. They did. Used to have a little thing with some, I suppose it was some kind of antiseptic in it.
Yes.
And for each man, they just dipped it in and wiped it off. And so all the lads used to think that everybody tried to get in front of the queue when the needle might be sharp. They didn't like it at the back in case it were blunt, you know. I don't know what sort of things I had. Needle after needle against every disease under the sun. And typhus was one of the real bugbears. It was. But the funny thing was, we never seen them. Oh, I did get sandfly fever while I was out on the desert. It's a mite in the sand that buries in under your skin. And you don't notice it, but it goes under and you'll find your skin is getting hard like concrete. And it works itself out. Oh. And then this cracks. Of course, we were out at Mersamitru and places like that. There were no doctors, really. And when we got back to Cairo, went into the hospital, Citadel Hospital, and they treated it. They used to put a needle in, I don't know what they put in it, and slow but surely this crust all fell off and left your hand okay, you know. And then I had blood poisoning in the same arm. That was at Mersamitru. But otherwise, I didn't do too bad.
What could you do in Egypt when you weren't on duty? What were the recreational?
Go downtown.
What was downtown?
Go down to the brothels if you wanted to. Quite a lot of history in Cairo. Museums. Go to the pyramids. I've been to the pyramids. I've climbed the pyramids. I've climbed them up. And I've climbed them down. I've climbed them in the dark. And I've climbed them down. And I've been inside them. When I went out during the war, I went out and they sent me on a rest camp in Egypt, to the Egypt, Cairo, and I went down to the pyramids and now they've opened them up and you can go up inside. Yeah. We used to have bets on. There used to be an old Egyptian at the bottom with a blunderbuss. He was supposed to stop you from climbing, obviously, but like all Egyptians, the wide open to a bride, two cigarettes and you can buy anything out there with two cigarettes, you could. And at night, we used to climb them. And when you got to the top, you used to have to strike a match. And then they'd time you with the watches, how long it took you in the dark and all that sort of thing. Yeah. And we put another theory at rest. The theory was, when we went out there, that nobody could drive a golf ball off the top of the pyramid and to clear the bottom. You could, because we took a golf club up and two or three balls up, and it was quite easy to clear the pyramid. Because they always thought that the gravitation brought the ball back in again.
Yes.
But it didn't. No.
When you were doing your training in the desert, did you do any training beyond the regimental level?
No, not really.
So no grand exercises or big manoeuvres?
Any what?
No grand manoeuvres or big exercises?
Oh, well, exercises against the Sudanese Defence Force and all that, but my God, They could beat us all of that, because they could go through us in the night with their camels and you wouldn't even know they'd gone through. Oh. Wonderful, they were.
Where did you meet them? Was that down in Upper Egypt? Or
They were in Cairo itself.
Oh, they were?
Oh, yeah, they had a rebel regiment of them. But they was run by the British. They were. And they were very, very efficient. They were very efficient. I mean, they moved, was to go out on the Mezabah II and across the Siwa. And especially in 1936 when Mussolini invaded Abyssinia, we took up positions from Mezabah II across the Siwa, because they thought he might try to take Egypt at the same time. So we had the Sudanese force, and my regiment, and of course artillery regiments and what have you. And they were Sudanese, they could go through us at night with the camels and we wouldn't even know they went through.
When you took up those positions, do you remember how they were laid out?
Well,
what you were doing?
Yes, strategic points. Encampments where you could get behind and view the desert from that angle.
Yeah.
And of course, near water wells, because there's no water, only water wells on, if you can find these water wells on the western desert. And wherever you could get, there's no shelter, I mean, there's no trees, or very few. So you had to get every place where there's, you could kind of get below ground with your vehicle or whatever, you see that. And that happens even today in the Second World War.
Well, you dug in?
Yeah, well, you dig in and you sandbag. Mm. We had plenty of sandbags with us and plenty of sand.
Was that before or after you were mechanised?
Oh, this was when we was mechanised.
You were mechanised?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, we never saw any action of any description, really, with horses.
Yeah.
We were just manoeuvres.
When you went out to Egypt in 1932-33, that time, were you aware that there might be trouble with the Italians?
No, not aware, nothing. Mm. We didn't, never even dreamt of it.
You hadn't?
No, never even dreamt of it.
I mean, you were in the army, 32 onwards. Did you ever have any idea that you might end up fighting the Germans at that time?
Well, when you join up, this is what you join up for, isn't it? You join up for king and country, and then you had to accept what it was thrown at you, don't you? So we never gave it a thought. We never prayed on it.
Yeah.
It was always in your mind that it might happen. You see, but 36, when we in the Palestine and Arab War, that gave us an inkling of what the war would be like. We was, well, perhaps fortunate, unfortunate, to be plunged into a war in the early stages.
Was that, I mean, when did you actually give up the horses and get the armour?
Just before 1936.
So it was 1935
then? No, 1935.
Yeah. How was that actually done, that process of mechanisation?
Hmm?
How did they carry out the mechanisation?
I'll tell you. Mm. That was our drill uniform.
Ah, yes. Yeah, with the Woolsey helmet.
Yeah. That's my father and my mother.
And your father in his Lincolnshires.
Yeah.
Uniform.
I've got another photograph of our last parade with the horses. Yeah. Oh, what have I done with that? Now then, you went back to what?
How was the process of mechanisation carried out?
Well, it was the Abyssinia expectations that got mechanised us.
Yeah.
Because they'd got mechanised themselves. So what they did, they sent us a load of Ford cars out, saloon cars out, and then we had to leave the cab and cut the top off and make pickups on it.
Yes.
And in the back we had a 303 water cooled machine gun mounted.
Is that a Vickers gun?
Hmm?
A Vickers gun?
Yes. It's a water cooled one.
Yeah, belt fed.
No. Yeah, belt fed, yeah. That's all right. Well, that was put in the back, strapped in the back. And at that time, we was getting a kind of a